Infrastructure is on the agenda. I'm Pam Puso, Fox News. But not in Washington, in England, where day two of the G7 summit is underway. A senior official with the Biden administration says the global infrastructure effort aimed at helping developing nations is in response to China's Belt and Road Initiative. Yesterday, world leaders signaled support for a global corporate tax rate.
The Biden team says they believe the key to global economic fairness is this new global corporate minimum tax of 15%. A senior Biden administration official explains why they like this tax on a conference call. We see this as a critical step towards ending the race to the bottom on corporate taxes that's come at the expense of workers, at the expense of investments in domestic renewal, and at the expense of growing the middle class.
Fox says Peter Ducey. Tomorrow, President Biden travels to Windsor Castle for a visit with Queen Elizabeth. Then it's off to Brussels for a NATO summit. From there, the president travels to Geneva for a face-to-face with Russian leader Vladimir Putin, who sat down with NBC News. He was asked about President Biden calling him a killer and spoke through a translator.
I've gotten used to attacks from all kinds of angles and from all kinds of areas under all kinds of pretext and reasons and of different caliber and fierceness, and none of it surprises me.
President Biden has said he wants a stable, predictable relationship with Russia. Mass shootings in Savannah, Georgia and Austin, Texas. In Savannah, police say one person was killed and at least eight others hurt last night. In Austin, police say at least 13 people were hurt at a downtown restaurant. No word on suspects in either incident. Today marks 5 years since the shooting massacre at the Pulse nightclub in Orlando, Florida. 49 people were killed. The suspect was killed by police. America's listening to Fox News. Efforts to tighten voting laws in Republican-controlled states are being examined by the Justice Department.
Attorney General Merrick Garland says the Justice Department will double its staff in the Civil Rights Division responsible for protecting voter rights over the next 30 days.
We are scrutinizing new laws that seek to curb voter access, and where we see violations, we will not hesitate to act.
Garland says the department is also scrutinizing post-election audits
to ensure they abide by federal statutory requirements to protect election records and avoid the intimidation of voters.
The department is publishing guidance for early voting and voting by mail. Jared Halpern, Fox News.
The fatal shooting of a black man outside a Louisiana convenience store has led to a multi-million dollar settlement. The children of Alton Sterling will receive $4.5 million over the next 4 years. That's according to Sterling's family and the mayor of Baton Rouge. Sterling was shot in 2016 after police received a report about a man waving a gun outside the store. The incident, which was captured on video, sparked angry protests. The officer who shot Sterling was fired. Another was suspended. The world wants answers about the origins of the coronavirus, but China remains unwilling to assist.
Secretary of State Antony Blinken spoke with China's top diplomat. State Department says Blinken pushed a transparent study in China into COVID's origins. China's government then accused the U.S. of politicizing this and calls the theory that the virus escaped from a Wuhan lab absurd.
Fox's Rich Edson. COVID-19 restrictions are a thing of the past in Chicago. Capacity limits have been lifted, along with indoor mask mandates for the fully vaccinated. Pam Puso, Fox News.
In Bethesda, on the southbound lanes of the Rockville Pike between Locust Hill Road and Cedar Lane, only one left lane gets through that due to ongoing water main repairs, so just allow some extra travel time. So far, 270 looks good, though, from Germantown headed towards Gaithersburg and Bethesda. In Virginia, getting reports of an accident on the Georgetown Pike eastbound near Tebbs Lane near the Madera School, so use caution there. Now for GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Some lingering showers and patches of drizzle early on this morning, but otherwise we'll see mostly cloudy skies today. Temperatures a little bit warmer, highs near the 80-degree mark, mainly into the upper 70s, and rain chances, they'll really fall off as we head towards the afternoon. Later on tonight, becoming partly cloudy, lows back in the 60s throughout the region. For your Sunday, fair amount of sunshine through the day, high temperatures in the mid-80s. Could see the potential for a few late-day showers and storms, thinking that would be best possibility by the evening hours. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
Now, the Saturday morning update.
Good morning. It is the Saturday Morning Update. I'm Rick Fowler. Thank you for joining us. It is day two of the G7 Summit in Cornwall, England. It's the first meeting of the industrialized democracies in 2 years. And today's agenda, rebuilding global economy, the pandemic, and foreign policy. So far, the members of the G7 have pledged 1 billion doses of vaccine toward global efforts. And kind of a different tone. You might sort of think this is a little on the woke side, but this is Boris Johnson kind of summarizing things yesterday.
We need to make sure that as we recover, we level up across our societies and we build back better. As G7, we are united in our vision for a cleaner, greener world and building back more equal and in a more gender neutral and perhaps a more feminine way.
A more feminine way. Okay, well, that's how he sums it up. And we'll talk with KT McFarland about the summit. We'll also talk with John Gizzi about the upcoming summit with Vladimir Putin. Joe Biden, of course, will be meeting with Vladimir Putin. And Vladimir sat down for an interview with NBC News yesterday. It was Keir Simmons. And in the interview, first off, Vladimir Putin compared Donald Trump to Joe Biden at a time when relations obviously now between the U.S. and Russia are at a historic low. And that's what he said. It's ahead of the summit with Joe Biden. Putin said to Keir Simmons, "Well, even now, I believe that former U.S. President Mr. Trump is an extraordinary individual, talented individual. Otherwise, he would not have become president. You might like him or not, but he didn't come from the U.S. establishment. He had not been part of big-time politics before. Some like it, some don't like it, but that is a fact." As for Biden, Putin said that President Biden is, quote, radically different from Trump because President Biden is a career man. He has spent virtually his entire adulthood in politics. That's a different kind of person, and it is my great hope that, yes, there are some advantages, some disadvantages, but there will not be any impulse-based movements on behalf of the sitting U.S. president. Vladimir Putin said in the interview that he can, quote, work with President Joe Biden. I think that translates into English as Putin saying that he can work Joe Biden. We're going to see how this all plays out at the upcoming summit later in the week. Well, some fireworks in the Democratic Party this week, and you've likely heard about it by now. Representative Ilhan Omar of Minnesota drew rebukes from fellow Democrats along with Republicans. And this is the tweet that she wrote, in case you haven't heard what the controversy is about. This is Ilhan Omar tweeting earlier this week. "We must have the same level of accountability and justice for all victims of crimes against humanity. We have seen unthinkable atrocities committed by the U.S., Hamas, Israel, Afghanistan, and the Taliban." So she equates the United States and Israel to Hamas, Afghanistan, and the Taliban. Well, a dozen Jewish Democrats, including Jerry Nadler, labeled her comments offensive and called for her to clarify her statement. Clarify her statement. That's as strong as you're going to get, Jerry Nadler, is, well, it's offensive and clarify it. If anybody else had said that, including a Republican, they would have been out to remove them from all the committees and probably get them thrown out of the Congress. But he and the other Democrats, obviously afraid to stand up to Ilhan Omar and the squad. Obviously, the other members of the squad came to her aid and support. AOC, Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, defending Omar, tweeting that, quote, "she is pretty sick and tired of the constant vilification." Nancy Pelosi is going to sweep it under the rug. Here's what Speaker Pelosi said yesterday when asked about it.
Should any further action be taken against Representative Omar for her comments?
No.
Are you concerned
about
the buy-in it may cause?
No, I don't. I think that she clarified her remarks, and that was we accepted that, and she has a point that she wanted to make, and she has a right to make that point. There was some unease about how it was interpreted. She made her clarification.
Wow. Talk about a slight little tap on the wrist. I mean, that's a tap on the wrist. You can't even feel that tap on the wrist. Are the Democrats scared to death of the progressive wing of the party, or what? Unbelievable. Well, here's some other news. Attorney General Merrick Garland announced on Friday that the Justice Department will aggressively fight efforts to restrict voting rights nationwide following the blitz of new voting laws in Republican-led states that stem from former President Trump's accusations of fraud. In a speech Friday, Merrick Garland outlined a number of steps the Justice Department will take to protect every citizen's right to vote, and within the next 30 days said the department will double the number of employees in the Civil Rights Division enforcement staff for protecting the right to vote. He says, quote, "There are many things that are open to debate in America, but the right of all eligible citizens to vote is not one of them. The right to vote is the cornerstone of our democracy, the right from which all other rights ultimately flow." Justice Department has said they will examine the new voting laws across the country and take action against any violations. It's 6:16. This is the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. Michelle Murray's in the WMAL Traffic Center.
In Virginia, watch out for an accident on the Georgetown Pike near Tebbs Lane near the Madera School. That is on the eastbound side. Looks like there's also delays on the westbound side, so do be aware of that. Also, if you are traveling in Bethesda, keep in mind that on the Rockville Pike southbound between Locust Hill Road and Cedar Lane, only one left lane is getting through that due to ongoing water main repairs. And in Fredericksburg, a portion of River Road is closed between Kings Highway and Rouser Road due to flooding conditions. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Some lingering showers and patches of drizzle early on this morning, but otherwise we'll see mostly cloudy skies today. Temperatures a little bit warmer, highs near the 80-degree mark, mainly into the upper 70s, and rain chances, they'll really fall off as we head towards the afternoon. Later on tonight, becoming partly cloudy, lows back in the 60s throughout the region. For your Sunday, fair amount of sunshine through the day, high temperatures in the mid-80s. Could see the potential for a few late-day showers and storms, thinking that'll be best possibility by the evening hours. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
And in the nation's capital, we're at 68 degrees, 617 on the Saturday Morning Update.
Washington's Mall, WMAL, where Washington comes to talk.
It is the Saturday Morning Update. I'm Rick Fowler. Thank you very much for joining us this morning. It is always great to have you with us. And, of course, we will be joined by our experts today. Jennifer Harper is going to join us right after the 6:30 news. And she's got some very interesting poll numbers on, obviously, how America's feeling about the Congress that seems to be going down. And you ever had a friendship that broke up over politics, or you know really got into it and got into an argument over politics? Well, some fascinating numbers on how Democrats are different in viewing friendships than Republicans are when it comes to politics. Interesting numbers. We'll talk about that with Jennifer Harper coming up this morning. You know, there's the big story about President Trump and Bill Barr were allegedly subpoenaing phone records of the congressman, the Democratic congressman. Well, we're going to talk to Jim Trusty about that story this morning. Of course, Jim is our legal expert, and we'll catch Jim around 6:45, 6:50 this morning. And if you haven't heard of the story coming out of Oregon of the woman who was arrested for riding her motorized scooter on a sidewalk without a helmet, and this one is going all the way up in the courts in Oregon. Great story. Got that one coming up with Jim this morning. John Gizzi will join us, and John's going to take a look at what's going on in the infrastructure package, that some agreement finally at the end of the week. We'll talk to John about that. And also John will preview Vladimir Putin versus Joe Biden and the upcoming summit. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer joins us this morning, and we're going to look at some of the wokeness that's going on in the military with Tony. Also, the reports that Russia is aiding Iran with a satellite. Vladimir Putin denies that. We'll see what Tony Schaefer has to say about that. And then KT McFarland will be coming up. We're going to talk to her about the upcoming Putin-Biden summit. And also we'll talk to KT about what's going on at the G7 summit over the weekend and the positioning of the United States in the upcoming summit with Putin is going to be a very, very interesting discussion. We are at 6:20. It is the Saturday morning update on WMAL. Tough week for Kamala Harris. Now, you know that she's been talking about the border and not wanting to go down there. She's been really kind of, tired of hearing it from a number of the interviews that she's done this week. Of course, she was in Central America. She's been criticized by many, many people. She's kind of had about enough of it. She got into it with, of all people, Univision. But here's one of the clips from the week.
I've said I'm going to go to the border. And
when are you going to the border, the Vice President?
The administration has asked. I'm not finished. I've said I'm going to the border. And also, if we are going to deal with the problems at the border, we have to deal with the problems that cause people to go to the border, to flee to the border.
She probably wasn't expecting a tough question from Univision, and she got one there, and she was irked. And she's kind of been irked all week with the reporters, and you may have seen some of this back and forth earlier in the week with Lester Holt, and she's just gotten a lot of criticism. Now, we're all concerned about the border. I mean, we've seen these crazy numbers in terms of the numbers of people crossing the border. It's something like 633,000 so far in 2021, and that's approaching a 20-year high. Well, people in Texas are not happy about it. They're not happy about the inaction from the government. So the governor of Texas is going to take things into his own hand. And this is an announcement from Governor Abbott of Texas as to what's going to happen with the wall.
I will announce next week the plan for the state of Texas to begin building the border wall in the state of Texas.
Now, the next question is, what will the Biden administration lawyers say about that move? Film at 11. 6:22, Saturday morning update, WMAL. Stay with us. We'll get interesting comments from Senator Kennedy on Anthony Fauci. That's next. The Saturday morning update continues. I'm Rick Fowler. Thank you very much for being with us. A lot of talk this week about Dr. Anthony Fauci and some of the GOP senators demanding that he resign or be fired, and a lot of questions about the origins of the COVID virus, the Wuhan lab, and what Dr. Anthony Fauci has said about it. Marco Rubio, Tom Cotton, Marsha Blackburn, all Republican senators, calling for Dr. Fauci's resignation, claiming that he has lost the confidence of the American people. Well, Senator Kennedy, John Kennedy, Mississippi, always has a way of kind of cutting right to the chase. And here's Dr. Fauci, summarized by Senator John Kennedy.
Dr. Fauci needs to cut the crap. We're not debating dance moves on TikTok here. We're talking about millions of human lives. Since day one, Fauci and his expert friends have told us, look, the virus occurred naturally. It jumped from a bat through an intermediate host into human beings. Well, it's been a year. Where's the proof? Where's the smoking bat?
You gotta love Senator Kennedy. You just gotta love the guy. Here's a story you may not have heard because it didn't get a lot of national media attention on the big networks. Remember the dust up last summer in Lafayette Park when President Trump walked over to St. John's Church and all of the claims that President Trump ordered that the park be cleared of protesters so that they could have the photo op? Well, the U.S. Park Police, according to a new Inspector General report, did not clear racial injustice protesters from Lafayette Park. to allow President Trump's march to St. John's Church, but instead did so to allow a contractor to install a fence safely around the White House. The park police had the authority to clear protesters during last summer's clash outside the White House. That, according to the report released by the Interior Department's Inspector General this week. I tell you, that's what they said that day. That's what the park police said that day, and that's what the White House spokespeople said that day. But that's not what Joe Biden said throughout the campaign, and it's not what Kamala Harris said throughout the campaign. Here's what they said.
Peaceful protesters dispersed in order for a president from the doorstep of the People's House, the White House, using tear gas and flash grenades in order to stage a photo op in one of the most historic churches in the country.
Just a couple of nights ago, this guy, Donald Trump, who happens to right now be president of the United States, would throw tear gas at people who were peacefully protesting so he could clear the roads.
Well, those were two flat-out lies, lies that were repeated by all of the mainstream media. Nice work, everybody. Real good. Are you going to apologize? Are we going to make corrections on all of that madness? I doubt it. It's 6:28. It's the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL.
Washington's Mall, WMAL, where Washington comes to talk.
In other news at this hour, Republican Senator Ron Johnson from Wisconsin has been suspended from YouTube. He's been suspended from uploading videos for 7 days after the company said he violated its COVID-19, quote, medical misinformation policies. The issue stems from statements Johnson made during a June 3rd Milwaukee Press Club event. In his statements posted to YouTube, he criticized the Trump and Biden administrations for working against using cheap, generic drugs to treat COVID-19. A YouTube spokesperson says the site's medical misinformation policies don't allow content that encourages people to use hydroxychloroquine or other drugs to treat COVID-19. The video was removed. Johnson says YouTube's censorship proves the company has too much unaccountable power. Apple is seeking to protect its image as a guardian of personal privacy, maintaining it was blindsided and handcuffed by the Trump administration probe that resulted in the company handing over phone data from two Democratic congressmen. Apple delivered its version of events on Friday. That in response to news reports detailing the U.S. Justice Department's attempts to use its legal power to identify leaks tied to an investigation into former President Trump's ties to Russia. Apple provided a limited amount of personal information in response to a 2018 subpoena from a federal grand jury, but said it had no way of knowing all the circumstances. 6:32, it's time for a check of traffic and weather. Michelle Murray's in the WMAL Traffic Center this morning.
On the outer loop of the Beltway at the Legion Bridge, watch out for a disabled vehicle in the right lane. Stay to your left and use caution. Also, watch out for some accident activity in McLean. He spent on the Georgetown Pike at Tebbs Lane. In Bethesda, remember that on the southbound lanes of the Rockville Pike between Locust Hill Road and Cedar Lane, only one left lane is squeezing by due to ongoing water main repairs, so watch out for some slowdowns. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Some lingering showers and patches of drizzle early on this morning, but otherwise we'll see mostly cloudy skies today. Temperatures a little bit warmer, highs near the 80-degree mark, mainly into the upper 70s, and rain chances, they'll really fall off as we head towards the afternoon. Later on tonight, becoming partly cloudy, lows back in the 60s throughout the region. For your Sunday, fair amount of sunshine through the day, high temperatures in the mid-80s. Could see the potential for a few late-day showers and storms, thinking that'll be best possibility by the evening hours. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
67 degrees, 6:33 on the Saturday Morning Update. The Saturday Morning Update continues. I'm Rick Fowler. Jennifer Harper is with us every weekend. She writes Inside the Beltway at the Washington Times. Good morning.
Good morning, Rick.
Well, we'll go slightly outside the Beltway, but within the state of Virginia. Gubernatorial race, it's going to be a real hot one, and you've got three Virginia governors stepping up to support potentially the next governor. Who are they and what's going on?
Just an interesting political moment here, and let's talk about Republican gubernatorial nominee Glenn Youngkin. And he is, like, totally laser-focused on winning back the Commonwealth of Virginia for the GOP. And he has gotten a very unique boost in this very challenging quest that he has. And let's mention first, Mr. Youngkin, he's 6'7". I wonder if anyone knows that. He's a very tall gentleman. He is the former CEO of global investment firm The Carlyle Group, and he has earned a thumbs up from three former Republican governors of Virginia. How about that? Bob McDonald, George Allen, and Jim Gilmore, they're all rooting for him, and they came out with a joint statement this week to show their support. And here it is. They said Glenn Youngkin is the political outsider, the problem solver, and a new kind of leader that Virginia needs. With Glenn's proven business experience, he will be a breath of fresh air in Richmond and bring real change. He has what it takes to reignite Virginia's economy, grow its opportunity for all, and create jobs. And last but not least, they say Glenn will lift up every community in our Commonwealth, prioritize public safety, and make sure our schools are focused on achieving excellence and preparing children to succeed. Glenn brings a positive, optimistic spirit to the job and will get results by bringing people together across party lines to solve problems. Nice recommendation there, and certainly we can all follow the 6'7" governor of Virginia hopeful.
And that'll be interesting because Jim Justice, the governor of West Virginia, is also 6'7". We've seen a lot of infighting between Republicans, various factions of the Republican Party. This week, the Democrats really had at it. A little civil war going on there. Speaker Pelosi trying to patch it up at the end of the week, but I don't think that one's over yet. What is a possible uniting factor for the Republicans out there right now?
One thing that is actually uniting them is keeping the watchful eye on the never-ending security challenges on the southern border. You have to remember that our friends at the U.S. Border Patrol, they are charged with looking after nine very specific areas, but they spread across six different states. So, interestingly enough, our friends at the Republican National Committee have done a very fact-based analysis of this, and this is according to Tommy P. Jones. He's the Rapid Response Director of the Republican National Committee. He says, in the past few months, illegal immigrants from more than 160 countries have been encountered at the border. For context, the United Nations only has 193 members. So very interesting number there to think about the sort of the global quality that our border has taken on. In fact, they're saying that the crisis has gone global down there. And those numbers that I just read to you, this is data from the New York Times. So the New York Times is also noticing these things. And the RNC goes on to say, and it's not just the number of countries, it's the number of people too. The number of illegal immigrants from beyond Mexico and the Northern Triangle has skyrocketed from 9,416 in January to over 50,000 in May, according to the preliminary estimates. And again, they're saying the Biden's border crisis goes global. And they're also pretty uneasy about the outcome of Vice President Kamala Harris's fact-finding mission this week to the Central American nations without that stop at the southern U.S. border. And this is what they have to say on that. When Harris claims she is addressing the root causes of Biden's border crisis by avoiding the border, she is not telling the truth. People from around the world, including cartels and terrorist organizations, are exploiting Biden's policies to enter the United States. The true root cause of the crisis is Biden's terrible open borders agenda, a failed agenda his administration is only doubling down upon. So, that's one thing that the Republican Party does agree on in house.
You know, I saw some interesting research that you wrote about this week, and I think it's fascinating the feelings that people have now about politics, even when it comes to friendships. What is that poll telling you?
Well, this is a great poll. This is very, you know, me and my polls are this early in the morning, but this is coming from the American Enterprise Institute. That's a public policy think tank. They also have a project called the Survey Center on American Life, and they've discovered some very unusual things. Republicans actually make better friends than Democrats. So let's look at the numbers. Among Republicans and Democrats alike, 8 out of 10 have friends who share their political identity. Well, that's pretty interesting. But they say, importantly, Republicans have more bipartisan friendships than Democrats do. A majority, 53% of Republicans, say they have at least some friends who are Democrats. In contrast, less than one-third, 32% of Democrats, say they have at least a few Republican friends. And among all Americans, only 15% have ended a friendship over political beliefs. But let's go to our political findings here. And they say that ending friendships over political disagreements occurs more among liberal and Democratic-leaning Americans. Democrats are twice as likely as Republicans are to report having ended a friendship over a political disagreement. And then they go on to say, political liberals are also far more likely than conservatives to say they are no longer friends with someone due to political differences. That means 28% versus 10%, respectively. And no group is more likely to end a friendship over politics than liberal women are. 33% say they stopped being friends with someone because of their politics. Again, this is coming from the Survey Center on American Life. And they conclude Republicans make better friends these days.
Are Americans feeling any friendlier toward Congress?
Oh, gee, funny you should ask. I think the Americans are pretty weary of Congress right now. And let's drag out another one of my famous polls. This is from our friends over at the Economist YouGov poll. Very good poll most of the time. And currently, they say that only 8% of Americans strongly approve of the job the lawmakers are doing on Capitol Hill. That's right, 8% strongly approve. Let's go down to our numbers here really quickly, Rick. 30% of U.S. adults strongly disapprove of the job the U.S. Congress is doing. That includes 47% of Republicans, 40% of independents, and 12% of Democrats as well. 21% overall somewhat disagree of the job performance. That includes 26% of Republicans and 21% of independents and 22% of Democrats. And 16% neither approve nor disapprove, kind of across the board. Same for the rest of our demographics there. Only 15% somewhat approve. That includes 5% of Republicans, 12% of independents, and 27% of Democrats. 8% strongly approve. That includes 3% of Republicans, 4% of independents, and 17% of Democrats. And 10% are not sure at all. Again, this is an Economist YouGov poll, but as I've noted over the years, I don't know what happens to the opinions on Congress, but they are always languishing out there. So still the same way. The public's weary, and they're going, not so keen on that job performance.
Well, cancel culture has run amok. What's the latest victim you reported on this week?
Oh, well, it really ran amok this week, and it ran amok right into the bakery. That's all I can say here, because the cultural commentary this week has come down to pies. Yes, like delicious pies that you would eat. And this is coming from the British publication The Guardian, always an interesting read. But they published a food article, and here is the title of the food article. Food Injustice. Let's start with America's apple pie. And this came from a contributor named Raj Patel, and he questioned the origins of the apples and sugars that you find in the pie. And he makes the case that this has played a role in creating a negative cultural outcome. This is what he wrote. In the drama of nationalist culture, the bloody and international origins of the apple pie are subject to a collective amnesia. The apple pie is as American as stolen land, wealth, and labor. Anyway, this garnered a lot of reaction. The American apple pie is canceled. That was according to the Daily Mail. That's another British newspaper. They went knee-deep into this story because it was so like, yikes, what's happening here? But Mr. Patel, the author of the analysis, he's actually an American citizen, and it picked up global coverage. Everyone was so surprised that the American icon was being canceled, but that's what happened in this particular article, and it was picked up by The Independent, The New York Post, The Sputnik News, and quite a few other ones. And also, it went crazy on social media, and The Guardian cited one tweet that said, "Apple pie is racist, too." These people are nuts. And Daily Wire editor emeritus Ben Shapiro, know him well. Anyway, he said, remember when we used to use the phrase the flag, motherhood, and apple pie to signify things about which Americans were unified? It is now, quote, an offensive symbol of white supremacy and birthing people. So anyway, that's where we are in cancel culture this morning, and we could just all go out and get some pie. How about that?
Well, it would be the flag, birthing person's hood, and apple pie now, right?
That's about right.
Jennifer Harper, Inside the Beltway, The Washington Times. You can follow her on Twitter at Harper Bulletin. 6:46, time for a check of the traffic and weather. Then we're back with Jim Trusty. Michelle Murray's in the WMAL Traffic Center.
On the Beltway and Cabin John on the outer loop at the Legion Bridge, a disabled vehicle being cleared from the right lane, not causing any delays, but just a heads up. In McLean, you'll still find some crash activity eastbound on the Georgetown Pike at Tebbs Lane. And in Bethesda, southbound on the Rockville Pike between Locust Hill Road and Cedar Lane, one left lane gets by due to ongoing water main repairs. If you're traveling right now in the district, watch out for an ongoing work zone. On New York Avenue at the 3rd Street Tunnel headed towards 1st Street, the construction is in the middle of the roadway. On the inbound side, two lanes get by at 1st Street. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Some lingering showers and patches of drizzle early on this morning, but otherwise we'll see mostly cloudy skies today. Temperatures a little bit warmer, highs near the 80-degree mark, mainly into the upper 70s, and rain chances, they'll really fall off as we head towards the afternoon. Later on tonight, becoming partly cloudy, lows back in the 60s throughout the region. For your Sunday, fair amount of sunshine through the day, high temperatures in the mid-80s. Could see the potential for a few late-day showers and storms, thinking that'll be best possibility by the evening hours. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
66 degrees, 6:47 on the Saturday morning update on WMAL.
Washington's Mall, WMAL, where Washington comes to talk.
Glad you've joined us on the Saturday morning update. I'm Rick Fowler. Each week, Jim Trusty joins us. He is a partner at IFRA Law in Washington. He is the former chief of the Organized Crime and Gang Section at the U.S. Department of Justice. Jim, good morning.
Good morning, Rick.
A story breaking at the end of the week. House Intelligence Committee Democrats said that they had learned that records from committee members and staff were seized by the Justice Department under former President Donald Trump in an apparent search for people leaking information to the news media. Meanwhile, reporters at the New York Times, Washington Post, and CNN have also said recently that they were targeted in DOJ leak investigations. Jim, you worked at the highest levels of the Department of Justice. What do you see in terms of trends now?
Well, I think in recent years, it's definitely gotten worse. It's gotten more acceptable. And maybe it's a function of, you know, kind of the 24/7 news cycle that everyone's racing to get the story in front of everyone else. But I think part of it is definitely that the media shows really no restraint at all when it comes to publicizing classified material. And they also don't seem to have a lot of concern about corroborating the anonymous sources that feed it to them. So, you know, what I've seen over the years most recently are politicians or at least politically ambitious people selectively leaking information to their friends in the media. And, you know, it can do incalculable damage. It does harm the country. Things are classified for a reason, not just to protect the reputations of people.
So where is the fine line when it comes to investigating leaks? Obviously, the Democrats are very upset right now. But what do you do? Just not investigate them at all?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of selective outrage here. I mean, there are people that, you know, forget that during the Obama administration, you had a Fox reporter that was being, you know, electronically surveilled. I mean, there's been all sorts of intrusions. And, you know, part of the institutional problem here is it's the media that's reporting on, you know, media surveillance or media subpoenas. And, you know, they've all got a vested interest. So I think you have to tread carefully. I mean, I recognize that you don't want to just take private information from media members or political figures and use it for whatever purposes. But I'm not averse to the idea of investigating leaks. I mean, we try to protect information to protect this country, to protect people's lives. And there's so much cavalier leaking going on right now that I really don't begrudge the general idea of looking into leaks. Otherwise, you basically surrender. You know, you're going to be demonized as stomping on the free press if you pursue leak investigations. But the alternative of never investigating the leaks is basically encouraging, you know, the folks that are supposedly victims of Barr's administration, the Jim Comeys, the Andy McCabes, the Congressman Schiff and Swalwell. I mean, these are the folks that are now crying out that they're victims of political abuse by the Department of Justice, and I have a hard time feeling sympathy for any of those four.
Apple is mentioned in the news stories. What is the role of Apple here, and what does that tell you?
Well, I think we're seeing a real seismic shift in leak investigations that's based on technology. And, you know, we see this kind of driving a lot of the Fourth Amendment litigation, questions about unreasonable searches and seizures. What's happened is now most of our data, most of these, you know, very personalized bits of information in our lives, we see them on our telephone, but they're actually possessed by third parties, by companies like Apple. And so what's happening across the board with investigations is instead of subpoenaing a reporter and saying, you know, who gave you this information? Who told you this thing? They go around the reporter to an internet service provider and they look for emails or cell phone carriers for call records or for text messages. And what that's done is it's really let technology tempt investigators where they can look for smoking gun connections or communications rather than hoping that reporters or politicians or other people will cooperate if they confront them directly.
A story that has made headlines around the country is probably not one that you would think of. A woman led police on a low-speed chase on her mobility scooter. It went to court. What the heck happened here?
Well, starting point, Rick, when you have a headline that grabs you like that, you know I'm going to read the whole story. And so I read the story. I actually watched a good portion of the 21 minutes of body cam footage. And, yeah, it's the immaturity in me as well as the lawyer that focuses on this case. So you had a woman by the name of Jennifer Grace Gaiman who lives in Oregon. She has a heart condition. She has a degenerative vision issue. And she rides an electric scooter. And on one particular winter night, she went to karaoke, and she left the club on her scooter, driving down the sidewalk and not wearing a helmet. And two police officers came up to her, very slow night, I have to think.
And Oregon.
Told her, yeah, I mean, apparently you can riot in Oregon, but don't you dare ride your scooter on the sidewalk. So a police officer basically says, you've got to wear a helmet. If you don't put your helmet on, I'm going to put you in jail. And Ms. Gaiman did not take that very well. That's why the body cam footage is borderline hilarious. She's not sparing in her use of words when it comes to these two officers. They then take about 20 minutes to hand her a ticket. And when they hand her the ticket, they say, now make sure you put your helmet on, and she basically waves goodbye and keeps the helmet off and drives off. Now, the body cam footage posted by the Oregon Police Department sadly cuts it as the chase begins. So we don't have the magic of a, white Ford Bronco police chase with this electric scooter. We just have her starting to peel off. And what happens is they follow her for about 2 or 3 minutes, about a mile, to her house, and then promptly charge her with the felony of fleeing and eluding the police.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's an unusual case, but it gets weirder. And so the case gets prosecuted for fleeing and eluding, and part of the issue is just a very narrow technical legal determination of whether a scooter is essentially a vehicle under the Oregon law. But here's the part that I want to focus on. The prosecutor decides to pursue the felony. She goes to trial, gets convicted. She is sentenced to 5 days in jail for this heinous scooter violation. And the state attorney general then defends the conviction, fights it in the appellate court, loses in the appellate court. And as we speak, the State Department of Justice, or the state attorney general, is debating whether or not they want to appeal it. And so think about the level of discretion that prosecutors have and think how they exercise it in this case. And that's why I'd say, you know, sometimes little stories or almost comic stories have bigger takeaways.
Well, Jim, it's obvious that Brookings, Oregon is 5 hours and 49 minutes, 342 miles from Portland, because in Portland, you can take over a city, burn down the police station, and no problem.
That's right. Actually, I think the distance is even further if you're on a scooter. It's probably more like 10 hours away. But, I mean, look, that, Rick, you know, we laugh, but that's really part of what bothers me about a situation like this. You know, I was a prosecutor for 27 years, and, you know, every ex-prosecutor announces they were the best thing. But one of the things that my first boss really taught me was the idea of using discretion, using judgment, and being judicious as a prosecutor before you were ever, you know, pushing for a particular case or result or for sentencing. And, you know, prosecutors aren't supposed to just do what the police officers tell them. If those two cops came in and said, hey, she was a real pain in the neck, you know, we really need to jam her up, the prosecutor needs to be able to stand up to that and say, well, wait a minute, you know, let's not oversell this case. They have the discretion to stop the case early on in its tracks. And here, the prosecutors and the appellate prosecutors that have handled it have fought it, you know, day in and day out. Think of the resources they're spending to fight on a case like this. And I think it's a sign of something that's a bigger problem in this country right now in criminal justice, and that's a decline of prosecutorial ethics when politically motivated prosecutors in particular get involved. And we see it in little cases where they just don't use good judgment. We see it in bigger cases where, you know, elected prosecutors announce we're going to get Donald Trump, for instance. I mean, that's not the way prosecutors are supposed to operate. And one last thing I would just say about that case, Rick, you know, there was an old saying in my state's attorney's office where we'd say bad facts make bad law. And what we meant by that is sometimes if you have a legally available route where you could pursue it, you could be aggressive, you could be cutting edge, you could make this conviction stick if you're lucky. Well, sometimes discretion's the better part of valor. And you look at it, you go, but is that really right? And what's going to happen if it goes up on appeal? And this is a situation where, you know, the case went up on appeal, and as the appellate court looked at the facts, they were thinking to themselves, you've got to be kidding me. Like, this is what we're spending our Oregonian police resources on. And so ultimately, the sympathies swing wildly to the defendant when the prosecutor doesn't really use good judgment. So I think that's an example of bad facts making bad law. Now Oregon is stuck with a law that will allow crazy karaoke scooters to go down the sidewalk at will.
Maybe they just felt they needed to set an example so that there wouldn't be an outbreak of folks coming out of bars, singing, getting on their scooters without wearing their helmets.
Yeah, tough times in Brookings.
Jim Trusty, partner at IFRA Law here in Washington. Thank you very much, Jim. And you can follow Jim on Twitter at Trusty Lawyer. Appreciate it.
Sure, thanks. Have a good weekend.
You too. 7 o'clock news coming up with Barbara Britt. We'll be back with John Gizzi. We'll get the very latest on the infrastructure deal. Interesting discussion coming up on inflation. What does that mean for home improvements? We'll talk about that coming up at the next hour. We'll also talk with Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, and KT McFarland will join us with her thoughts on the G7 summit so far. Stay with us.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington. America's reopening. Hear it here. 105.9 FM, WMAL. A Cumulus station.